Like Slim Shady, we back, Jules. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or like Kid Rock, more like.
Oh, yeah, like Kid Rock,
I'm getting increasingly into, I'm rediscovering the joys of Kid Rock, you know?
And me, of Eminem, my children absolutely love Eminem. Even the baby, she sings We Made You, which is hilarious.
Man, Detroit.
Oh, Detroit, of course.
I need to get some Faygo. And of course the ICP. Some Juggaloos. Oh, man. Oh, man. You know, we need to take the show on the road.
I know.
And I want to tape the podcast in a couple of months. If you're listening, please, Detroit Tourist Authority, invite us.
Come on.
We will happily come over because we love us some Detroit, Michigan. Anyway, let's move on because we got a big show. It's Juventus against Inter, top of the pit table clash in Serie A. It's the Manchester Derby. And, of course, it's Real Madrid losing again.
Yeah.
Sid Lowe will join us later to go and discuss that. But let's start at the Theater of Dreams. Jules, heading into this, I wondered, all right, could this game be decided by a keeper screw up? And I thought, well, if it happens, it's going to be the tall, thin man from Madrid.
From Europe,
Instead, it wasn't. Ederson, I don't think I've ever seen him play so poorly in a Manchester City shirt. Manchester United coming out, 2-0 winners. I want to start with City. And then don't worry, United fans, we will celebrate.
And give credit to Ole.
And I want to start with Pep afterwards talking about how well they played. With Bernardo Silva coming out and saying, we played really badly, it's unacceptable. Who's right? The guy who's won those Champions League?
No.
Or the little smirky upper middle class boy from Portugal?
Him. I mean, but Pep is such a bad loser, right? This is the attitude of someone who hates losing. Fair enough, we all do pretty much. But this is what is unacceptable is Pep's reaction.
They played well.
You can't go on live television in front of millions of people who pay a lot of money to listen to you. Give them an insight on the game, right?
He's contractually obliged.
Yeah, but it's not just a dude they pick out outside the stadium and say, like, they had no idea what the guy was, said, okay, what do you think? And the guy gives something stupid. This is Pep Guardiola. And we ask him a fair question, what did you make of that game? I'm sorry, but I cannot have him going, yeah, we played really well. I'm really happy with the players.
Was he being snarky? Was he being sarcastic?
But he always does it, Gab. He always does, every time they lose, he goes like, no. And even sometimes when they win, he goes like, oh, yeah. This is not good enough. I'm sorry. This is not good enough.
There's a part of me that feels, you know, you can do what you want after the game. But there's a part of me which also says, you're part of this reality TV show, which we call football. Because that is what it is, right? That's what brings in the sponsorship money and the TV money. And you're a part of it, and you've got some level of responsibility to play along. I don't expect you to go and reveal all sorts of secrets from your team, but just point out what you could have done better. Point out, you know, I don't see how this is helpful at all.
It's not. And I think, it was a big fat lie, clearly, and Bernardo was honest and truthful and said, like, we were not good enough. I mean, anyone who watched that game knew that they were not good enough. They didn't play well. It's not. And then for Pep to come out and say, yeah, we played great. Really, I'm happy with the players. Oh, what? You can't come out and say things like that when it's still not true. And on the same hand, where Mourinho goes too far the other way, the way he criticized it publicly and Ndombele after the Burnley game.
You don't have to mention Mourinho.
Just for an example, but even Pep after the Real Madrid game, who was playing down the whole tactical stuff, oh no, but you know, manages this. That was BS as well. You know, you tactically outsmarted Zidane. Just say my plan worked. Great.
His plan
didn't work on Sunday.
I am slightly in two minds about this. And at the risk of being tabbed, you know, arrogant, it's okay, I'm used to it. Sometimes when managers answer questions honestly, we in the media go and we take it in a million other directions and blame them for it. I think of Maurizio Sarri when he says, like, when he came out and he's like, oh, well, after the Lyon game, he's like, well, we were playing too slow. Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I can't get the players to play quicker. Or last year when he talked about Eden Hazard, he says, well, when the ball comes to Hazard, it can slow the game down and he doesn't really fit into what we're trying to do. He's answering the question honestly. And then what do we do? Like, oh, look, stupid, sorry. Why is he criticizing Hazard?
Well, no,
the problem
like,
is
okay.
There's this cacophony of, frankly, people in the media who start crap all the time, of ex-pros who don't follow anything or understand anything. Not all of them, obviously, but there is a loud minority of them.
Yeah.
And if he had come out and said, you know, we were terrible, United played on the counter, and they were always comfortable and whatever, he might have been slaughtered anyway. So I'm really caught in two minds about this. I would prefer
more
the honesty.
Yeah, you would have more respect for him. He said, you know what, I play the
But I also know why they're not honest, because when they're honest, there's a pylon.
Yeah, but there's a pylon as well when he lies like this, because we say, okay, Zinchenko, what was the idea? Why didn't Mahrez start? Mahrez should have started that game every single day of the week. How come you
bench? What
about Phil
Foden on the wing?
Well, I don't even need to tell you, we saw. And I think he had more influence when he dropped a bit deeper when Bernardo came off and Mahrez came on. But that was never a game for Phil Foden on the right-hand side like this. But for Mahrez, every day, Zinchenko. Okay, oh, you thought you were going to be smart. Zinchenko is a left-back. But no, look, he plays midfield when we have the ball and second midfield. And then Otamendi is completely lost. And then it's far too easy for Wan-Bissaka and Daniel James. And you're then like, that was stupid.
He did really screw the pooch.
He screwed completely. And as good as he was against Real Madrid, and we gave him a lot of credit and a lot of love, that one was just a massive mistake.
I'm wondering, does he just take it like it doesn't matter? You know, this season really doesn't matter. I could play Scott Carson at center forward, and we would still finish second, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe play Scott Carson in goal and Ederson at center forward.
Yeah, that probably
work better. But and so maybe he does experiments, and sometimes they work out and they don't work out, because he knows that it really doesn't freaking matter. They'll still finish second, especially given the way Leicester are dropping like a stone. On whatever, the gap is big enough, you're obviously not going to catch it.
What good does that make to your team, your fans, your
Because
players?
You're trying things, and maybe these things will work out.
Yeah, okay, but you lost three times against United,
so you admitted,
in the same season now.
No, that's fair enough. Let's give United some love now.
Yeah, just one last thing on City, and I want your opinion. For someone like Pep, who for so many years used his fullbacks so well, better than anyone before the Trent, Robo, diagonals, you know, he had Jordi Alba and Dani Alves, the two best fullbacks for many years. For now to underuse or even not use at all any fullbacks in his build-up play, in the movement going forward, I find it incredible. I mean, Zinchenko and Joao Cancelo yesterday on Sunday, but just gave you nothing. It's almost like they were not there.
I don't think Cancelo was that bad going forward. But
what did he do going forward? Is there one cross? Is there anything? No, nothing.
But I mean, I think he was just coming to terms with what was happening, around him. It is unusual, but Pep could also say it's a form of evolution, right? He's always experimented. He's always screwed around with his team. Always tweaked things. And generally, in the long run, it's worked out for him. And
I was amazed.
They're still there. And I think also we need to give... all right, in terms of giving credit to United, I'm going to take the win out of it. I'm going to focus instead on just the way they play. Because you can say that, look, in the end, both goals were the results of goalkeeper screw-ups. They should have had a third goal after the stupid back pass, the one where Martial nearly got himself injured.
The penalty as well, on Fred.
Yeah. I mean, they could have been 3-0. That was Otamendi.
Yeah.
But I'm saying Ederson alone could have cost you three goals
right?
And you're right. The Otamendi thing, which should have been a penalty. I didn't book him for diving.
No, come on, man.
And by the way, that is something, just to be clear on this, VAR could have intervened there if they thought it was a penalty.
Definitely.
You know, it's not a, had that been outside the box, they couldn't have, because it's a yellow card. But inside the box, it could have. That's Premier League VAR. But it could have easily been 4-0, right? We agree on that?
Yes, definitely.
But you could say all those goals came as a result of mistakes, but I thought United defended well. I thought Matic, I hadn't seen Matic play like this in a long time. And it actually worked for Solskjaer. 7 wins and 3 draws. I don't think these are great players out there, except for Bruno Fernandes and Martial when he wants to.
Yeah.
Should we be giving him a little bit more love? Is this something?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
and we've criticized him on the show a lot, and I think there were times
he deserved.
And there were times where he deserved to be criticized. There were some good performances at Old Trafford against Liverpool and against Spurs and against against other teams as well, where they played well. There were other shocking performances, let's not forget, throughout the season, home and away. But I thought on Sunday his plan, like against Liverpool, worked really well. The back three was a very good idea. That was the best option that he had. Clearly, Bruno Fernandes and Martial have something going on together in that kind of link and play. Bruno Fernandes has made a huge difference that got nothing to do with Solskjaer in a way. But yeah, he gave them a lot of balance. I still think that City made it easier for United on Sunday because they offered nothing pretty much going forward. But yeah, I thought.
But it's still a conundrum though, is it? Like, yeah, it's fine. So you're playing against a better team that's going to have the possession.
Exactly.
And you can play on the counter. Can you do this? Can you be comfortable doing this when you go, when you play Norwich? Well, actually, Norwich will probably also have the possession.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like.
Of course, that's been the problem.
When you go play Burnley, can you play like this and get away with it?
Yeah, that's the big problem. That's the problem they've had all season because there's no other plan. And Ole has been great with plan A, which is we have 25% of the ball like they had against City, and we scored two goals, could have scored more because we played on the counter and that worked well. But when you play against a low block with no space at all for Martial to run, or Daniel James, your friend Daniel James, that has no space to run into, he's got no idea what to do. I do think though that Bruno Fernandes changed a little bit that dynamic, because I think even against a low block, he will find pocket of spaces. He can influence the game a lot. And I think when Pogba eventually comes back next week or the week after, he will also.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah. Is next week or the week after? I feel like you've been saying that every week. Is it?
No, but this week he's been training. He will train again next week, probably a higher intensity. And then I still think that maybe the second leg against LASK in the Europa League. So not this Thursday, probably the following one. I think he might get a few minutes there.
Okay.
Which would be great for them. I mean, if you add Pogba to this team, right?
Okay, no, but where do you add him? Because it's funny because, I mean, on the show last night, they're like, oh, like, who do you choose when Pogba comes back? Pogba, Bruno Fernandes. And I'm like, damn. All right. First of all, I think Pogba, at full fitness, all things being equal, Pogba is a better player than Bruno Fernandes by some margin. Mm-hmm. But secondly, it's not a question. You've got two guys who are miles better than everybody else on the team, at least while Rashford's injured, and they're still probably better than Rashford. You fit them both in the team.
Exactly.
And if you can't do that.
Of course you can.
But what I'm curious of, do you go McTominay? I mean, I would go McTominay, Bruno, and Pogba.
Yeah.
Or I'd even consider, you know what, Daniel James, while Rashford's out, Daniel James is what he is. Maybe you play Martial wide, you play Greenwood at center forward, and maybe you play Bruno Fernandes behind.
Yeah, you could do that. You could play Bruno as a number 10.
You could play a diamond, right?
Exactly.
Bruno behind Martial and Greenwood or Daniel James.
Yeah, let's say Martial and Rashford. If you put together their strongest team, you would have Rashford and Martial up front, Bruno as a number 10 behind, as the top of the diamond.
Right.
Then we'll have
McTominay at the back, and then the other one can be Fred.
Yeah, Fred and Pogba. And I think that works. This is Pogba's best position, as we all know, because at Juventus, that's where he played, and he loved there. You could also put Matic in there. I think you then have a lot of options.
So it's a false problem.
Yeah, of course it is.
All right.
Everybody should be so happy that Pogba and Bruno will link up very soon together. And I think Pogba, from what we saw and I wrote it on the website, Pogba is very much looking forward to play with Bruno as well. So that those two could find each other with their eyes closed.
Onward and upwards for United, and the gap in the top four is just 3 points.
Right, Gab, let's be a bit serious, okay? For once, let's be a bit serious, because we're going to talk about Serie A and Italy. The Juventus Inter game to start with, and then you can explain a bit more what's happening there with the coronavirus pandemic and all what that could mean for Serie A. We were all very excited, I think, although the game was behind closed doors. Juve won 2-0 in what was a very controlled performance, you would say?
I thought it was a very good performance. I've said all season long, Juve aren't playing well. You can count on one hand the games where they played well. They played well both times against Inter. They played really well, I thought, last night.
Yeah.
They played well against Roma in the Coppa Italia. That's not too many. I mean, maybe one or two
Napoli
of the Champions League games.
The 4-3 win earlier in the season as well.
Yeah, but again, that's a game where you
still
last
three.
Minute.
Yeah,
you can see three goals at home, you know. I think we have to give some credit to Sarri, because, you know, he made a big call dropping Pjanic. It was a right call.
Yeah.
That midfield actually worked and looked dynamic. And I don't know if it was, you know, the people, Bentancur, Matuidi, and Ramsey. You know, Ramsey's comfortable running around.
Yeah.
Matuidi, of course, does it too. Bentancur has an edge. You know, in the end, you can say that the gap was a deflected goal. And by the way, did you notice how Cristiano Ronaldo, like,
yeah,
he's right on the ball and he's like, all right, you take it. He gets out of the way because Ramsey had obviously the much better angle.
It was, yeah,
can we stop calling him selfish, show him some love? Yeah.
Although you can see on his
face. He had a chance to set the record about.
Yeah, 12 games in a row and he didn't. Although he had 11 shots or nine. So he took a lot. He could have led this one because he took
it's
a lot.
It's his job.
I know.
And then the second one
is brilliant.
I know you love the technical bit.
Yeah.
Obviously that absurd turn and cut on the dime and then the finish.
Incredible. Dybala, who was
the control before that.
It's a bit harsh to bench Dybala as well. I know in the end it worked because he'd been, you know, he'd been really good in the last few weeks. Well, you know, as good as the team has been. I thought he was bringing some spark against Lyon, for example. He was one of the only ones who really did something, which was the last game 10 days ago, although they lost it. I don't know.
I think Sarri felt that Douglas Costa had to play, because of the, you know, because the acceleration he brings,
because he
has the legs. And so then it becomes, you know, Higuain or Dybala. And he felt that, you know, Higuain, with his ability, you know, was probably a better passer than Dybala, but more creative. And so he felt that was necessary. Like, it paid off for them. I think also we need to highlight from Juve's end, again, I've been critical of Bonucci at times, but, and De Ligt too. I thought both were exceptional.
They were so solid, yeah.
Lautaro really solid. And Lukaku might not as well have been there.
Yeah. You're right.
That was just a lot of leadership. On the flip side, from Inter, if you're Conte, you know, if you don't play the creative passer in your team, whether it's Eriksen or Sensi, then you need a team that's just going to go and hammer you. And they didn't do that. That midfield did not have the requisite intensity that you need. And if you don't have that, Juve can keep the ball and be in the ascendancy. And
that's what amazed me the most, is that first yellow card in that game was 63rd minute. And I don't know if it's because he was behind closed door and there
so
was
there's
no
nobody fans. Calling.
For this is the biggest game in Italian football, pretty much. You know, I thought there was no edge to the game. There was, like you said, there was no intensity from Inter in a game where they had to win as well because they had to reduce the gap. And now they're never going to come back from that. Now, I think, and the absence, the fact that they were not aggressive, that there was a lack of intensity, that. I don't know, I was like, what's going on? Like, was it, do you think because it was behind closed doors, so they...
No, come on. They play behind closed doors against Ludogorets. They're used to it. I don't... But
why then? How come in a game like this you don't turn up in terms of aggression?
Well, Juve turned up. It was behind closed doors for them, too.
Yeah, but for Inter, I mean, in a game like this, you know...
I think the approach was... The approach was wrong, and Juve played well. And I think all of Inter's limits came out, and I think, you know... I think Conte wasn't expecting Dybala on the bench, but ultimately though, he needs to ask himself, I need Eriksen in this team. I need
that
unpredictability in the team.
Yeah.
And you know, you bring this guy in the last 20 minutes, I mean, it's crazy. I think I'm right in saying that the only games he started have been in cups so far.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting Eriksen is peak Zidane. But on this team, he can be a difference maker.
Definitely.
And for you to bring this guy in, and I've heard so many theories, and I go back to this, and it makes me really uncomfortable because I hate it when, especially football people, when they stereotype. But honestly, I think he looks at Eriksen, and he says, you know how Eriksen's always kind of calm, and he's got that kind of like
dopey. You want to shake him a bit, yeah.
Yeah. And he looks at the fact that, you know, he doesn't look particularly physically strong, he's not particularly quick. And he says, like, you know, this guy's got no balls.
But why'd you sign him? If you don't play in a game like this, why would you sign it? Especially when Sensi is not there.
I think maybe he was hoping that, that Eriksen would turn out to be something else. But the problem is, but the reason this annoys me, the reason this makes me angry,
yeah,
is Eriksen looks like a guy who's a wuss, okay?
Yeah.
But he's not. He's not, because you've got 4 years of him playing for Spurs, except for the last 6 months, where you saw that actually, no,
yeah,
he covers a lot of ground. He presses. Mauricio Pochettino's game was very demanding.
Yeah, of course.
And he did it, and he covered a lot of ground. And this is, I'm not going to come out and say that, like, Hunter didn't watch him play at all for Spurs, except maybe the last couple, the last couple games with Mourinho, but damn.
I know. It makes no
really?
Sense.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, it makes no sense.
You can't find a place for this guy?
In the team that played on Sunday, he should have started every single day. You know, in the game plan that you had, it made no sense at all. He would have created so much problems for that midfield three, as we said, Bentancur, Matuidi and Ramsey, with his movement and everything. And let's not forget as well, set pieces, long range shots and things like that could have been very beneficial for Inter in a game like this.
What annoys me too is all these people coming up with, like, you know, other excuses. Well, but, you know, it's going to affect Brozovic. Brozovic sits there like, oh my God, there's another guy here who can pass the ball apart from me. Oh no, no, this is going to screw me up. It's not like Eriksen's going to sit in front of the back four.
Exactly.
Or the back three, right, as the case may be. I don't know. So now, obviously, Inter still have a game in hand.
Yeah.
With that, they could tighten things up. I don't think they're entirely out of it.
So it would be 6 points if they win
the
game in hand.
If they win their game in hand. I mean, and we'll get to this. I don't know how much longer this year's season is going to continue anyway.
Because no one's going to win the league, yeah, man. You know that.
Glad you find it so funny. Ha, ha, ha. It's hilarious,
no, it's
isn't
funny.
It?
Like, I find it sad.
Your sadness really
No.
But,
because let's be honest, apart from pasta, church and football, you've got not much going for you in Italy anyway.
No,
so
yeah,
that you take
right,
away
yeah,
a big part of your
we
life.
We have no fashion, we have
no
car industry.
You know, exactly.
Right. Ferrari or Renault?
No, I'm just saying, you know.
All right, whatever. Let's not go there. But, I don't think it's over. I think they can make up 6 points. It doesn't mean that they will.
Really?
Yeah, no, I think they can.
It doesn't mean that they will. It's not just on Juve, there's Lazio there as well. So they would have to come back on two teams.
Yeah. I don't think that you're out of it at this stage, but I do think it's all uphill, and I do think Conte needs to shake this team somehow. And it's not just like bringing in Alexis for Lautaro all of a sudden is going to fix things. So,
right, what's going to happen now for the rest of the season? Is there really a risk that they just cancel it because of coronavirus?
We'll know more about this ideally this week, possibly Tuesday. But of course, they suspended the league in Switzerland
yeah.
Which is just over the border. And we'll go into this more detail later. But yeah, I think it is something that a suspension anyway is something that's definitely in play right now. And now it's time to move on to Real Madrid because, Jules, this is the Liga that seemingly nobody wants to win.
Yeah. Which we said last week. We said they would drop more points. And
we were correct once again. But who better to talk about it with than Zinedine Zidane would probably be better than him. But since he's not available and he sounds funny when he speaks in English, next best thing, of course, is Sid Lowe. Sid.
I'm just delighted to be Zidane's number two. This is a definite step up in my career. Thank
you. he's unavailable on Monday mornings because, especially after defeats, because that's when he does his yoga and sits there and stews. All right. So Real Madrid go away to Betis, and you need to help me here because all those games that where they dropped points against Celta and whatever else, I was kind of like, you know what? And then the game they lost, I think was it
in October?
No, Levante, the one they dropped
Levante,
those points.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, all right, guys, chill the hell out. It's not that big a deal. They're still creating chances. They're still playing fine. You know, they're not as great as you'd expect them to be, but, you know, they're doing enough to win. They're unlucky. It's variance. It's chance. It's probability. Then in the second half, they show up to dispatch Barcelona Clásico. Everything's fine. But then against Betis, I thought Betis played really well, and they played really, really badly. Is this their worst performance in how long?
Well, look, I mean, this was one of the questions that was being asked last night, was whether this was their worst performance of the season. I think Zidane implied that it might well have been. Personally, in terms of the quality of the football, I think it was probably worse in Mallorca. But in Mallorca, that was at a time when... But, you know, the weird thing in a way was that Mallorca was at a time when we kind of... We still weren't convinced by them, and it was early enough in the season, and they'd done a lot of rotations. So there were all these conditioning factors that make you think, well, it can happen even if it's absolutely awful. Last night was... one of those where, yeah, it was awful, and I suppose it can happen, and there are reasons why it happens, but off the back of the Clásico, you think, okay, this is it now, you take a step on, and you secure this title. And they were, yeah, they were dreadful. They allowed Betis to grow into the game, because I think, you know, Betis, who hadn't won in six, who were starting to look over their shoulder and think, wow, this is a relegation zone dangerously close to us now. And I think there was a nervousness about Betis to start with. But as the game went on, it was almost as if Betis were kind of looking around thinking, well, this lot aren't that good, so we can go and take this game to them. And when they scored the first goal, which is an absolutely brilliant goal, I think they'd had two really good chances already. There'd been a brilliant save from Courtois off Fekir. A shot from Fekir. Yeah. And, of course, there was that Bartra header, which goodness only knows what he was doing. It looked like he was trying to head it over the bar to clear it rather than head it on to goal. And so Madrid were dreadful. And Ramos said this after the game, there was no complaints. There was no kind of hiding behind anything. He said, look, it's a fair result. We weren't good enough. And Zidane said much the same.
I'm all for rotation, Sid. And I like it. If you've got the depth in your squad and you're lucky enough as a manager, go for it. It's a season where you'll have 65 games. You can't play every single game. But if you look at the Mallorca defeat, the Levante defeat, and this Betis defeat, the point in common is that Fede Valverde was left on the bench each of those three games. Mm-hmm. And guess what? There was no intensity. There was not enough rhythm from Real Madrid. And they ended up losing that. I don't know why you're looking at me shaking your hands like
I'm
that, Gab.
Yeah,
you are. Let me finish and let's see what Sid say. Why on earth was he a sub again in that game? It made no sense to me to have that midfield that, you know, it's not going to work. Casemiro, Cruz and Modric, they don't work anymore. Even away, especially away from home, when you play against a team that would be obviously very aggressive, because Betis were always going to be aggressive last night in a game like that. It made no sense why he benched Valverde again for a game like that.
Well, I think there's a broader question there, and I broadly speaking, I agree with you. And I obviously, look, Zidane's idea is that you rotate, you keep everyone as kind of part of it, because at times you'll need them and you want them to be participants at that moment in which you do need them, and therefore you need them to be playing even at those moments when maybe you don't need them. The only person he's not really applying this to, of course, is Gareth Bale. Who he seems to be trying to send the exact opposite message to. But the thing with Valverde is, I sort of take you back to off the back of that Mallorca game, as Madrid started to find their feet kind of through November, December, just about into January. And this was a Madrid team, and we talked about this, that wasn't particularly brilliant. Right, this wasn't a Madrid team that all of a sudden thought, wow, they're brilliant. But there was a sense of kind of reliability about them. There was a sense of intensity about them. There was a sense of kind of competitiveness about them. And at the risk of exaggerating, and I realise I probably am exaggerating this a bit, the explanation for that was genuinely point the finger. Oh, it's that guy there. It's that Uruguayan guy in midfield. And Valverde, genuinely, it was the dynamism of him, it was the aggressiveness of him, the enthusiasm that he brought that seemed to be contagious to everybody else. And I'm not, you know, as I say, I'm exaggerating when you say he's the one that did it. But in part, he did. He, you know, this sort of shift in seriousness and kind of like, this is a team that can win the league. Why? Because every week they'll go for it. Every week they'll be aggressive. Every week they'll be defensively kind of focused, that there'll be a degree of concentration and aggressiveness about them that has been lacking in previous seasons. There's a reason why they've only won, I think it's two league titles of the last 11. And you look at Valverde and you saw him as the embodiment of this kind of shift in attitude as much as anything else, if not necessarily in talent. And so, yeah, I agree. When he's not in the team, and you cannot, I think, reduce it to one player, but it's really, really tempting to do so, because a lot of the time it feels like he is the key to everything. So, yeah, his absence was very surprising. That said, I suppose you could say, however poorly they've been playing, however much it feels like it doesn't work, a midfield of Kroos, Modric and Casemiro should still be good enough, shouldn't it?
Yeah, no, you're right. Why were you shaking your hand then? What's your problem with Valverde?
No, because you get these tropes with Real Madrid where all of a sudden an individual player becomes absolutely crucial. It's like when he benched Kroos a couple of games ago, and then all of a sudden, like, oh look, what a fool! How can this team win without Kroos? Now it's how can this team do it without Valverde? I think
surely you agree.
Well, actually, there is a point there. You can put those two together because I think what we've seen this season is we've seen that obviously Casemiro is absolutely vital. We know that
right.
That Valverde is the energy and the intensity. But if you want to be able to keep the ball, if you want to keep the ball moving, if you want to play with intelligence, then you do need Kroos. And I hate to say this as someone who really, really likes him, but the one you don't need probably is Modric.
No, look, fair enough. I think Modric has been on the slide for a long time, and I think, you know, if they could have moved him in the summer beyond the paper talk, they would have, and I think is that whole thing with his new contract and whatever, I thought that was all nonsense. But equally, you have to keep this guy involved because for the time being anyway, you're still involved in the Champions League. And
oh, absolutely.
You know what? If you mention how these three midfielders, Kroos, Casemiro and Valverde are all absolutely essential and so vital and so good, you need to find room for two of those three guys. You should be able to go and perform.
Exactly. No, that's exactly the point. That's
exactly
right. You go away to Betis, you should be able to use two and be able to not use one of them.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be a problem in itself.
I mean, I thought the issue was the problems were more further up the pitch, actually, frankly, than in midfield.
In terms of creativity.
I agree with that too.
Yeah. And the reality is that, you know, apart from Benzema, who's been, you know, who's come and gone as a goal scorer, understandably because he was working for other people most of his career, there just aren't very many goals. There isn't much directness in there.
That's true.
It's not just about creating the chances. And I also think we have to give a little bit of credit to Betis because Betis are one of those teams, and it's weird. I don't know. You said, I'll broaden this out with one of those questions that really only interests me and probably nobody else. But I feel that in La Liga this season, and I'm thinking of Betis and Celta in particular.
Celta is the one that bugs me a lot.
You've got two teams that are really talented, but absurdly inconsistent, and that's why they're not where they should be in the table. But on their day, things can come together. And they can make life really, really tough for top sides.
Yep. I mean, I don't know how much I can add to that.
Well, no, but it's not.
That's absolutely right.
I guess what I'm saying is it's not something we see as much. I just thought it was an interesting phenomenon. It's not something.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think. I don't know that there's an equivalent in the Premier League of that. I don't know in Serie A, maybe Fiorentina, but yeah. You know, maybe that's there aren't. It seems like it's a weird Liga phenomenon this year.
Here's a broader question then. I mean, and look, I say this as someone who follows La Liga and follows the Premier League up to a very limited extent, and almost doesn't follow the Italian league at all. Apologies for that.
Mistake.
But maybe it's something about styles and attitudes towards football. Maybe it's something just about teams here perhaps being more likely to try and address problems by being more creative or having more talented players in there and maybe not being quite as tough and aggressive. Although, of course, Getafe are very much bucking that trend at the other end of the table. I think as well, you can look at Betis and Celta and say that maybe you can reframe the question from the other side, which is that rather than these being really good teams that occasionally don't get it right, maybe these are actually not particularly good teams considering the quality of the players they've got and that they just kind of get it right every now and again. Again, because the players are so good. I mean, look at the Betis team, and it's interesting actually listening to. There's an interview with Ruby, the Betis manager, on I can't remember if it was Thursday or Friday now, but anyway, in the build-up to this weekend's games, and he makes a comment which I think sums it up in a way. He says, "You've got lots of really talented players, and you try to find a place in the team, and of course, sometimes it's difficult to get that many talented players to focus on other things." And I think there, in a nutshell, it is. You know, you've got a load of players who perhaps think they're too good for some of the other stuff.
I suppose that's part of the skill of being a manager with personality and knowing what you're doing. Sid, we're contractually obligated to check in on your title percentages every week. Barcelona obviously 2 points clear now. What say you?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
What was last week?
After, No, no, because seriously, after last week, this is exactly it. After last week, and someone said to me last night, this just proved, this shows that the Clásico was irrelevant now. So no, quite the opposite. Because imagine if, I mean, I know obviously one set of results leads to another, so you don't necessarily get the same results following on. I said, but imagine if Barca had won the Clásico last week. This is now 8 points clear. It's done. You know, that Clásico has
kept,
I know it doesn't work like that, but what I mean is,
my aunt had wheels, she'd be a bicycle. I mean,
well, yeah, exactly. what I mean by this is that this shows that last weekend was really important,
of
because
course.
It put it back in a position where the because even had it been 5 points, this looks different. I think last week I was absolutely convinced that that's it. Madrid are very much in the driving seat because of the emotional impact of this, because of the damage it does to Barcelona, because of the fact that it reinforces Madrid's approach, even if it hasn't always been sparkling. There's a solidity to them, which admittedly had escaped in the previous 2 or 3 weeks, but I kind of felt last week was kind of re-established, and now it's gone again. And so I find it I still feel like, when you look at objectively, you look at these two clubs, try and forget results for a minute, and I know that's not easy to do. Barcelona are in much more of a mess than Real Madrid.
Yes.
You know, club level, at institutional level.
Yes.
So there's a bit of me that, despite this lead at the top, still feels like Madrid are somehow more reliable, and yet they keep showing they're not. So here's the number. It's still 60-40 for Real Madrid.
Boom!
Oh,
yes!
Here we go.
I gotcha. I'm going to go be a little more conservative. I'm going to say 58-42, but it's still Real Madrid's league to lose.
I agree. 60-40 for me as well, like Sid.
Oh, my God. Barcelona Twitter's going to be cross. Sid, thanks so much.
All right. Barcelona Twitter's always cross, by the way.
Yeah, true. Whatever the context.
We're letting go because I want an objective opinion from you.
Yeah.
Fikir.
Yeah.
You got great games, you have not so good games, nearly signs for Liverpool, then he doesn't. Is there an alternate reality where he signs for Liverpool and everything works out differently? Where do you see him?
I think, I really, and I thought for many years that it's like he had no limits. The talent was so good that he could become really a really, really world-class player. And the Betis choice was always a weird one, which is one that I think ideally, in an ideal world, he wouldn't have gone there. No offense to Betis, and there before, you know, Betis Twitter goes crazy against us. You know, the idea was a club like Liverpool, that kind of standards. And Betis is a lovely family club, you know, whatever. But this is, I don't think, but I really think that the talent that he has should have given him more
opportunity. If he goes back in time, does he make the same choice?
Yeah, I think so. He's happy there. I was told he's happy there. You know, he likes it there.
He'd like it more if Betis were a better side.
Yes, yeah, but ideally it was a platform. I still think that the inconsistency that he has, that he shows, maybe because it comes from his attitude overall. You know, I don't know how hard he works, for example, at training. I could see him with the national team when he's there, but at club level every day, you know, I don't know how serious he is in his life outside of football. But I certainly think that he should give much more than what he's giving this season, for example, because of the talent that he has.
Enough Liga. How about some quick hits as well? Jules, though, before we get into it, you had a point to make about Dimitri Payet, right?
Yes, I just think
as in Payet, right?
Yeah, Payet. Too many kinders. He had too many kinders recently, and I think he shows. However, he's still very good on the ball. He scored almost an amazing goal for Marseille against Amiens on Friday night. So still a pleasure to watch. I just don't know why he let himself go that way. It's
Who's Marseille's shirt sponsor?
Uber Eats.
There you go.
There you go. Too many McDonald's delivered.
Bayern make it 6 straight wins by overcoming Augsburg. But Jules, it wasn't exactly straightforward with the kid Xerxes stepping in for Lewandowski. And also, it looks like Philippe Coutinho is finally contributing. Could he be value-added down the stretch?
Yeah, I think they will rotate. I mean, it was... come on, let's be honest. This was a game that they knew they were going to win. So forgive them to just go in 50%.
But Augsburg had taken all of 4 of their past 27 points.
Exactly. In the end, it was not a great win. It was comfortable, I thought. And they dealt with it very well. But yeah, Coutinho, in the previous game as well, I thought he looked very sharp. He looked good. I just think he's got an amazing talent. You know that.
You don't want to be messing with a system that works. So
no,
he's somebody you're bringing off
not.
The bench.
Exactly. Which I think he would be happy with that. I think he can have an impact coming off the bench. It's just that I don't know. I love Coutinho, and I think he deserves to have a team that is built around him somewhere. Somewhere, doesn't have to be a top club, but somewhere where he can really express himself and shine, because I think he has a wonderful talent.
He's Bayern's Christian Eriksen right now.
Yeah. Well, we have a new league leader in La Liga. It's Barcelona, who beat Real Sociedad 1-0 thanks to a late Messi penalty. There are plenty of controversy over the supposed handball by my countryman, Robin Lenormand, and also a pretty lackluster Messi as well.
Yeah, tons to unpack here. First of all, the VAR handball, I don't...
Be honest, did you see it when you were watching? Because I didn't.
I didn't see it when I watched it. I watched the replay. The guy's looking down when he heads the ball, which looks weird. His arm doesn't seem to be that far out. I didn't get it at all. I think it was odd about this game, and we'll get to Messi in a minute, but Real Sociedad, they had at least three starters on the bench, Oyarzabal, Zubeldia.
Two of the best players for sure, yeah.
I didn't get it, and the explanation is, oh, but they're tired from playing in the Copa del Rey semifinal against Mirandes, and they have a midweek game. So what? So you tank against Barcelona?
Maybe you think it's a lost cause and you're going to lose. Or maybe they partied long and hard after the Mirandes win the qualification.
It was just odd.
It was weird.
And they're only a few points outside. They're, what, 3 points from the top four?
Yeah, yeah. And you can just imagine, had they had their strongest team out, I really wonder, they probably would have given Barca
even with this team out. Even with this team out.
Well, yeah, even with this time. Yeah, yeah.
Because the penalty was whatever. We just talk about Lionel Messi so that the Cristiano fanboys don't get upset because, you know, when we pointed out when Cristiano plays poorly. Messi, not good. Not good.
Not good at all. And annoyed, right?
Extremely annoyed. He was irritable. It's third straight game in which he gets booked. We obviously saw that tackle on Casemiro in the Clásico here again tonight. He's human, and well, he's not really human,
of course.
But he's allowed to have off games. He's allowed to lose his cool. But it's not a good bellwether for the team when the guy who's basically carried you most of the season is now really getting upset.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I think that yellow card, that tackle, I know there was the one on Casemiro, but this is a proper lunging slide, like a bad, what those bad defenders make. Not Leo Messi. And that was so uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah.
So weird. And I'm like, okay, surely there's something bigger than just that he was not playing well for the first half in that game and that the rhythm was not there, the fluidity wasn't there.
Is he trying to send a message? Because obviously Luis Suarez is out. Apart from Arturo Vidal, you wouldn't want to have any of these guys with you in a street fight. No, I'm serious. Like, if you were in a street fight, again, apart from Arturo Vidal, which is fine, and obviously, and Luis Suarez is injured, you'd always take him.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what? What's Griezmann going to do? Do the little dance?
First. He does his hair first.
Martin Braithwaite is just way too nice.
Yeah, too nice.
Frankie de Jong is also another one. Come on. Rakitic, I won't even go there.
Wouldn't want to, hurt his pretty face.
You know, Piqué would probably have a discussion with him. Yeah. Busquets might do something sneaky and then run away, but come on.
Ter Stegen? Could Ter Stegen be like a nightclub bouncer?
Yes.
Yeah, okay,
but slim picking.
You're right. You would more fancy Real Sociedad.
Is this what he's trying to do? He's trying to rattle it, or is he just losing his cool? Because he's frustrated.
Cool.
He's like, this Barcelona team really sucks.
It does.
We're top of the table because the other guys suck even more, and I'm annoyed.
Yeah, and Movistar had a camera on him during the Clásico, and there's a few times where he has the ball, he passes it on to someone. There's a very good example on Frankie de Jong, and then he keeps running to ask for the ball again, and the ball doesn't come, and you can see him going like, really frustrated that the ball is not coming back. And I think it's not a season that he's enjoying. Let's be
nothing
honest.
Wrong with him getting annoyed, though, right?
No, of course. His level, he knows that people around him should be better than that.
Liverpool take another step towards the Premier League title. We know that they're going to win anyway. It's a 2-1 win over Bournemouth. Jules, it wasn't easy, though. I thought they played poorly again. What's going on? And please don't tell me it's all because Jordan Henderson isn't there.
It's not. And
this
everybody
is an English
knows.
Media creation.
Oh,
right?
My God,
We love Jordan Henderson. He's a nice guy. You don't like him at all.
No, as a player, I don't like him. He's a nice guy.
He's a good person.
Yeah, he's a good person. But as a player.
But surely it's not all because of him.
No.
And his absence that they're so bad.
No. And then now I'm hearing, oh, but look, he's not there. He deserves player of the year because he's not there. And when he's not there, what?
Who makes these?
Give me a break.
Do you want to know who made that argument?
No, it's probably
Augie's making that argument.
Oh my God, yeah, exactly. I never want Augie on this show ever again. Henderson brings something that when he's not there,
he's not.
Wait, this is just motivation. It's hard to get excited.
Yeah, exactly.
Over this.
And some legs and all that, you know. But
Atletico next.
Atletico next, and they have to be very careful. They keep conceding chances and goals, and okay, the Bournemouth goal should have been disallowed because there was a big push from Callum Wilson on Joe Gomez, but still Joe Gomez should have been a bit stronger, I think. I think Fabinho, since coming back, is not the Fabinho before the injury, and I think, you know, unless he comes back at his best with that kind of protecting the back four in that holding role, they will always be a bit in trouble. And I think the front three, especially Firmino, look out of shape and tired and don't make the same movement, don't have that sharpness anymore. I mean, Firmino still hasn't scored at home. It's ridiculous. So I think it's a bit worrying. I think it's a bit worrying before the Atleti game, I have to say. So Tottenham are held to a draw at Burnley 1-1, but that's overshadowed by Jose Mourinho calling out Tanguy and Ndombele again. He said that he knows he can do much better and he can't keep getting opportunities to play because the team is much more important. Are you okay with this public criticism? Please tell me you're not, because otherwise we're going to fall out.
So first of all, I checked. This is only the fifth game that Ndombele has started since Mourinho's taken over in all competitions.
5 out of 20.
In like 4 months, yeah. And he's only played 90 minutes once. So obviously, you can't talk about all these opportunities he's getting because he's not really getting that many. I am okay with the criticism, and I will tell you why.
What, publicly like this?
Yes, I will tell you why. Many, many years ago, when I sat down with Jose Mourinho for the book I did with Gianluca Viale, The Italian Job, he said, some players, you need a carrot. Some players, you need a stick.
Yeah.
John Terry, I can go get in his face and say, F this, F that, you're ugly, you're a loser, and I know he's going to play harder. William Gallas, if I say that, he's just going to walk away. I'm never going to get him back. I'm going to put my faith in Jose Mourinho that he is the Spurs manager. He's one of the highest paid guys in the world, that he knows the right buttons to push with Ndombele, right? So for now, I'm going to say, you know what? This is okay. If you think you're going to get a good reaction out of him by making Spurs' record signing seem like some weirdo who can't play, that and singling him out,
but do
that's
it privately.
Fine.
What's the point of doing it in front of the television?
Maybe you feel like you need to do it. Maybe feel like you need to do it in public. If you think all that matters is what Ndombele comes back. But I'll tell you what, if Ndombele doesn't play again and he doesn't come back and he doesn't go back to being the player he's supposed to be, it will mean that the public criticism has only made things worse. And it'll mean that Mourinho
got
wrong.
Okay, so now my counter argument. He did it 2 months ago. Exactly the same thing. Oh, and Ndombele this, but what's going on? Did it work? No. And Ndombele is 23 years of age. 4 years ago, he was playing in the French fifth division. Okay? This is all new. This is his first 7 months in the Premier League. He had one season in the French top flight, and we all admit, it's very different to the Premier League.
That's what
Why'd you do this?
It's Oliver Skipp's first season too.
I know, but Oliver Skipp is, you know, like, why'd you do that? Yeah. For me, it makes no sense whatsoever. And by the way, I think Mourinho, again, trying to find another person responsible for Spurs being so abject in the first half, to say the least.
It's never his fault. But anyway, Paris Saint-Germain stripped to Strasbourg on Saturday became the first Ligue 1 match postponed due to the coronavirus. Yeah. And it's news alert just a few seconds ago. Paris Saint-Germain's game against Borussia Dortmund confirmed behind closed doors. We'll get to that later. But Jules, what exactly happened with Strasbourg?
It's just that Strasbourg, the region, the county, if you want, the department is the Haut-Rhin, and the next department is called the Bas-Rhin, obviously from the Rhine River, and this is a clutter area for coronavirus. So
because of its proximity to Germany.
I don't know if it's that, but the two areas where we have a lot of cases are the Bas-Rhin, so east of France, and then just north of Paris in the Oise. And the local authorities thought it was too much of a risk to have the La Meno Stadium full of 40,000 people with between 25 and 30% of them coming from that cluster area that could have maybe spread it. So the behind closed door was an option. They preferred to just postpone it.
Did you know that the guy who designed the Statue of Liberty is from Strasbourg?
No.
And that you should know your own history. And that there there is a miniature version of, well, it's not that miniature, still pretty big, of the Statue of Liberty in Strasbourg, right by the Strasbourg airport, which is tiny.
Yeah.
There's an Ibis Styles there.
So nice.
That's good. It's fun facts.
It's pointless, but yeah.
It is pointless.
Yeah. And just on the Dortmund clash, that's what the club were fearing. They tried everything they could to not have the game behind closed doors. So, for example, they employed a mass cleaning company called ISS. I wrote that yesterday.
ISS, for all your mass cleaning, deep disinfecting needs.
To disinfect ISS, the
new sponsors of the Gavin Jules Show.
Saying.
I want to get an ISS
I'm
t-shirt.
Just saying, no. To disinfect the Parc des Princes from top to bottom, which they did, to try to show the local authorities, look, you know, it's good, we're fine. They thought about...
That is so good that you need to name check it, right?
Yeah, because,
Just
you know...
Sweet, ESS.
No, but for people then to know that I get my good sources,
from
I get
ESS.
All the details from everywhere, you could check it out, ESS, and you see what they do. And if you need one for your house, if you have a big house, you know, just give them a call.
Even if you have a small house, no small. Job, too big or so small for ESS.
But clearly, it didn't work. Because the game was still announced today, like you said just now, play behind closed doors, which obviously is a huge blow to PSG because they wanted the support of the fans, and it will stand empty. And I can tell you now that we will be knocked out.
Negative Nelly.
Always. Now, speaking of coronavirus, which you know well because it's all your fault, you Italians, I read with great interest your excellent piece on how the Italian Players Association boss, Damiano Tomasi, the former player, wants the league suspended. So is it going to happen? We touched upon a little bit during the Juve Inter chats. It can't happen, right?
So I think there's been a real shift in how people are seeing this, especially because, you know, on Saturday, an entire chunk of northern Italy, where I happen to come from, went under lockdown. It's more than a quarter of the population now have these pretty severe restrictions.
And so you can't get in or out, pretty much.
You can in certain circumstances, yes, or whatever, but you know, there are a ton of restrictions. And, you know, he's saying, why are we playing football in these circumstances? Forget the health aspects, right? But all other sports have been suspended. Said the Swiss league's been suspended. Yeah. It's already coming into football. You've Thomas Kallenberg, the former Danish international. He's infected.
Poulsen, Ajax.
Several players. Christian Poulsen's in quarantine. I don't think it's been confirmed.
Sorry,
he's in quarantine because he hung out with Kallenberg, who's his former teammate. I think it's just a matter of time. I don't think people are quite wrapping their heads around this. There's a stat which kind of really rattled me, which is when they imposed the first restrictions in Italy. In Italy right now, the only European country to have imposed these restrictions, they had about 800 cases. They have 850 cases in Germany right now. And the whole full match program took place this weekend. Mm-hmm. They have nearly 1,000 cases in France, and apart from Strasbourg, it went off. Now, a lot of it has to do with concentrations and clusters and stuff like that. It's not a binary situation, but I don't think this issue is going away. Now, you're probably wondering, if they do suspend the league, you know, what happens?
Yeah.
Because you can't postpone games, and you have to finish, by the Euros. And, first of all, I think it's kind of less important what happens.
So could you have not a Serie A winner for the 1920 season then?
Yeah, or maybe you have decided, oh, look, it's between Lazio and Juve. Let's go have them play in Saudi Arabia in a one-off game. I don't know. I think this is, you know, with this potentially spreading across Europe, it may come to the point that where you have to think about extending the leagues into June and postponing Euro 2020.
Yeah.
Especially given the dynamic of Euro 2020, where it's, you know, 12 venues, 11 different countries, it's something that has to come into play. Now, if you postpone it, this is where you open a hornet's nest, because the logical time to postpone it to would be 2021. But then again, it clashes with the FIFA Club World Championship, the new expanded one, which is going to be in China. You also have the Nations League finals in that period. You also have some pretty important World Club qualifying dates as well. But I think we need to prepare ourselves for that possibility. And it's not just because playing behind closed doors, frankly, as your buddy LeBron James pointed out, sucks. It's just that we don't know when this is going to end.
Yeah.
And I think this is more important. Chelsea beat up Everton 4-0 and make my old buddy Carlo Ancelotti sad. Jules, we don't need to dwell on that. We can dwell on how excited you are for this Billy Gilmore. Everybody else seems to be so. It's his first start. We're ready to, his first Premier League start.
Yeah.
Played phenomenal against this little team you might have heard called Liverpool, where he bossed them.
And got man of the match.
18 years old. Oh, you're on board. This is it.
No, but okay.
Let's hype this guy.
Well, yeah, but we don't need to hype him because the hype was already big before. For the people who don't know Billy Gilmore, he was at Glasgow Rangers. He's Scottish. He was not just the best player in his generation in the whole of Scotland, but probably
in the whole world.
No, but one of the best in his
he's not Ryan Cherky though.
Well, yeah, Ryan Cherky is 2 years younger though.
Oh.
And Eduardo Camavinga is a year younger. But
he's passed it already.
He was always one of the best in Europe in his age group anyway, playing for Scotland youth teams and all of that. And you could already see that how great.
Let me talk. Everybody follows Glasgow Rangers
that's what I'm
under
saying
18
to people.
As closely as you do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So had you seen him play, for example, with the Scottish youth teams,
like
you would
did.
Have seen. Anyway, that's why 2 years ago, when he left Glasgow Rangers, pretty much all of the top clubs in Europe were after him. Chelsea, which, by the way, as you know, got them into trouble, managed to sign Billy Gilmore, and the hype still went on because he was very good with the Chelsea youth teams, and then we were wondering when he will break into the first team, and I thought it was surprising that Lampard didn't use him a bit more before this week, I think he was ready. I saw him, for example, I went to interview N'Golo Kante maybe a month ago, and I was training, and Billy Gilmore, I kid you not, was above everybody else. And it was only a training session, and I know it's not because you play well at training, even at a club like Chelsea, that then you can go and reproduce the same thing against Liverpool and against Everton. However, he was amazing.
I saw him for the first time. He came on, I think it was against Sheffield United, played the last 15 minutes, looked terrible earlier this year, but he was playing a slightly different role. This past week has been remarkable. What strikes you most about it is this guy's personality. It's not the ability. There's a lot of young players who can pick out a pass and stuff and are good on the ball. But this dude steps in there with Mount, with Barkley, who I don't think I've ever played, in a three in this way.
Yeah.
Jorginho's suspended. He comes in and he looks like he's been doing this all his life. And that was absolutely remarkable. Remarkable, too. I know it's lost in the annals of history. Well, people saying, Chelsea inconsistent. They've lost too many games. Chelsea had 7 starters out in this game. Chelsea's front three was the old folks, Pedro, Giroud, and Willian.
Like 45 years of age.
Pedro looked really good, by the way. Their entire starting midfield is out, Conte, Kovacevic, and Jorginho. And, they go out there and they get the job done in the terrible Everton side. And they're still 3 points clear. And Leicester play Monday night. We'll see what that happens. But I don't think it's unthinkable that they finish third, frankly. Even with what you consider all the injuries they've had.
Definitely.
And
the
really
inconsistency,
remarkable.
Which is normal, again, because there was a lot of young players.
Of course.
It's impressive, but it's certainly one to keep an eye on for the future. Milan lose to Genoa and slip further away from the top 4 spot. But Gab, it's been an extraordinary week with the argument between Ivan Gazidis and Zvonimir Boban, the chief football officer at the club, who has not been sacked. What's going on? What happened?
Well, I wrote an excellent column on this, which, of course, you evidently didn't read. Otherwise, you wouldn't be asking me, Julius.
Well, no, I'm asking you for the listeners because we touched on it last week as well.
So Boban's been sacked, and this is the equivalent of suicide by cop. It's the equivalent of when you play dodgeball and you just kind of go mad and you run into the opposing half. This is an issue when legendary ex-players decide that, oh, look, I'm going to go and play executive, especially when they don't have any history of it. I think it was inevitable that he had to go. A lot of this is over Ralf Rangnick. Gazidis supposedly met Ralf Rangnick and got a deal with him. Rangnick denied that he's on board for next season. I think if Rangnick does come to Milan, it's not going to be to coach. I think he's going to come to Milan do Boban's job.
As a sporting director. Like,
which is effectively what he's done. I mean, I know he managed Leipzig last year, but effectively that's what he's done in the last three of the last 4 years. But the reaction is interesting because you have a lot of people in the media and some fans saying, oh, how dare Gazidis go and have a go at Boban. Boban's a club legend. He loves the club, yada, yada, yada. Boban coming out and saying that, you know, he, because the interview he gave to the media where he going sort of savaged Gazidis and asked for a meeting with the owners, that wasn't a pre-agreed or an authorized interview. And he's like, well, I didn't know we were living in North Korea. No, okay. But you know what? Decisions have consequences. You're not in North Korea. Precisely because you're a grown-up, you should know that if you say those things in public, you're going to get fired. It's a simple thing. Yeah. He knew that. Boban's too smart for that. The reaction, the ultras, you know, those much maligned ultras, I think they understand this better than anybody else. They issued a statement and they said, first of all, dirty laundry, keep it in house.
Yeah.
Second of all, we're fully aware of who brought in these bad players, going back to, obviously it wasn't Boban for Paquetá and Piontek, but that was your buddy Leonardo, but Maldini was around for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're the ones who hired Giampaolo, supposedly without interviewing anybody else. And you guys need to bear the responsibility for that. Gazidis, you and Elliot, bear the responsibility for putting Boban in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's blame to go around. But there's a difference between making bad decisions when you're in a job and then getting yourself fired by going and attacking your employer and making a bad decision by hiring you in the first place, which is obviously what happened here. Arsenal stink it up against West Ham, but emerges 1-0 winners. A win is a win, Jules, but were they a little lucky?
They were so lucky. And again, because they should not have beaten Everton the weekend before. They did, 3-2. They should not have beaten West Ham on Saturday, 1-0. And they did. Like I said, scored a goal late, but
came off the bench again.
Came off the bench for Nketiah. I think Arteta prefers Nketiah, and I'm a big, like I said, fan, as you know, and it doesn't make much sense to me. But Nketiah had been scoring. He scored in the FA Cup. He scored against Everton. He scored a few goals, and like I said, had a few.
It's hard for Lacazette to score when he doesn't play.
Yeah, of course, no, but let's hope that this starts a really good run for Lacazette as well. But you're watching the game. This is Unai Emery's team. This is Unai Emery's football. It was exactly like coming back to the last few Unai Emery's game where there was no intensity. There was no movement. There was just no patterns of play, no triangles, no runs. There was just nothing in that game.
Ozil? Was there some Ozil? Did you shoot? Cause I was talking to a friend who's an Arsenal fan. And he's like, yeah, but Arteta's turned Ozil around.
No,
this guy's a big Ozil fan.
Yeah. No. I mean, no, there was, Ozil had some good games when Arteta arrived, and especially at the beginning.
You didn't think he was good against West Ham?
No, I don't think he was at all. There was no creativity. They had no shot on target in the first half. There was nothing.
This is my same Arsenal friend who goes on and on about how brilliant Kieran Tierney is, and I kind of feel like,
but he can't. He doesn't.
How do you know
exactly? He's never.
How do you know? I know. He's just like Andy Robertson, you know.
Yeah, of course. But they won, and I think there was a lot of games under Arteta earlier in the season where they played much better and didn't get the win. And this time, luck has turned a little bit for them, but they need to improve. They need to play better. Ceballos was good in the way how he played forwards. And defensively, Pablo Mari looked okay, but Leno had three outstanding, one especially on the Michael Antonio header in the second half, but he made three very, very good saves to keep the score.
Okay, enough Arsenal. Nobody
no,
cares.
But it's true. It's true.
Enough Arsenal.
It was, you know. Well, you prefer talking about Borussia Dortmund?
Oh, yes.
Here we go.
Oh, yes,
there
the beast.
Second in the table, winning 2-1 at Borussia Mönchengladbach in what was the big clash in the Bundesliga. What did we learn, Gab, other than the fact that Erling Haaland is better as an attacker than a defender? Although he looked a bit jaded, though, I thought.
I gotta explain this. I just thought you saw this, the equalizer. It comes off a set piece. Everybody steps out and steps forward to play them offside.
And one dude is on the line.
He runs in the opposite direction. No, it's not just he stays behind. He runs back towards the goal. And it was like, dude, what happened? What are you thinking? It's funny because sometimes you remember he may be the beast, you know, that's risen, but he's still a big kid.
Yeah, right? Of course. That's, like, this, he will learn from this. But yeah, he basically covers Tindall if you haven't seen the game.
I thought this was a good game.
It was good.
I thought Dortmund were physical. We've seen them kind of go and kind of wilt in certain situations in the past. They didn't do that. Thorgan Hazard, tremendous goal.
Yeah, very
channeling
good
against his old club, channeling his big brother. Who's probably not bigger than he is, but hey, that's a whole other issue. You know what I mean? And still jitters at the back, but they showed personality, which is not something that you can say about Borussia Dortmund week in, week out.
The good thing watching that game is that it was very intense, as you said, and it had to be. And while PSG were having a day off and
all watching the game, it all goes back to PSG.
Of course it does. All watching that game on television back home on the sofa cozy, Emre Can had to run a lot. And so did the whole of the Dortmund team, to be fair. And I really hope they feel really tired on Wednesday now. They've got cramps coming after an hour or something. And then we batter them.
So is there any truth to the suggestion that Paris Saint-Germain ordered them to shut down the Strasbourg game so that they could all be well rested?
I don't care. Yeah, maybe.
I don't care.
Anything to win.
Atletico Madrid and Sevilla battled with 2-2 draws. The poor man's Cristiano Ronaldo, Lucas Ocampos, is on fire. Well, I mean, on fire. He's scored in recent games and won a penalty, which he conceded. Jules, though, I thought he looked better, right?
I thought it was a really good game, to be fair.
I thought it was a really good game.
Don't
sound surprised.
I know, but yeah, I was, because even Luke de Jong scored a really nice team goal, which I was like, wow, okay. Second goal, not so good from Sevilla. But Atletico, I thought, looked good. But I think it's when they open up, that's the problem. I think when they too open in those games where they have the ball and they go forward a lot and they push people forwards, I think they get vulnerable defensively, and they could have conceded more. They could have scored more as well.
Carrasco had the ball for the winner.
Yeah, he had two really good chances in the second half, but I thought Joao Felix took his goal very well, and they exploited that.
Is there a chance they go to Anfield and do not go old school Atletico?
But what would you do though?
Because to catch Liverpool off guard. Liverpool haven't been good.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Schroeder would have watched that Bournemouth game and thought, you know what, they're there for the taking as well.
He would have thought Jordan Henderson's not there, so we can.
Yeah, so
they're there
go,
for the taking,
you know, and maybe target Fabinho and put pressure on Fabinho, which Chelsea did and it worked. Bournemouth did and it worked. So I think Atleti will do that. But then if you do that, you have to play 20 or 30 yards higher up on the pitch than what you would usually do for a game like that away from home, right? And do you think they would feel comfortable with that?
Probably not. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out. I'll be curious to see.
I'm going there as well for French television, which means I won't be watching PSG Dortmund. So don't send me messages. I don't want to see that game. I'm too scared. And I'll be focusing on Liverpool Atletico, which is going to be great. Well, finally, you're in love with Julian Nagelsmann, but there's always a question.
Yeah, you are.
There's always a question like, okay, Leipzig boss, Julian Nagelsmann, Gab's lover, says after the 0-0 draw to Wolfsburg, where they stung the place up, let's be honest. I know Timo Werner was on the bench and Dani Olmo as well, but they were not good. That he doesn't want to talk of Bayern and that the objective is now a top four finish. Is he right to be so negative? And I know you're going to defend him again and say, like, no.
I'm not. They didn't play well. They didn't play particularly well in this game. I think, you know, look, if you're playing Yusuf Poulsen and Patrick Schick up front, it's not the same as having Timo Werner.
No. But it's Wolfsburg against them, right? So.
Yeah, Wolfsburg away from home. Wolfsburg are like seventh in the table.
I know, but they're not that great. They're not that great for a team that Leipzig that
they're
has been
seventh
so
in
good.
The table.
I know, but like,
hey, we chill out, okay? You can't go and win every game.
No, I know.
He's right that they didn't play well. I think it's weird when you say like, well, our goal is to finish in the top four when you're third in the table. Or actually, they were second in the table.
Second,
I think when they play the game, but now they're down to third. Look, I mean, I think it is. It is what it is with Leipzig. You know, they're looking forward to doing something, obviously, against Spurs in the Champions League. I think 5 points with 9 games left when you've got Dortmund as well in the mix ahead of you.
Yeah.
I think it could be a bridge too far. Now you're going to say, oh, but when it was Inter...
But Inter is 6 points and it's not a bridge too far. But for Leipzig, it is 5 points.
Well, there's more games left in Serie A, assuming the league doesn't get suspended. No, and also I don't think Juventus and Lazio are as good as
Dortmund and Bayern.
Yeah, as Dortmund and Bayern. I mean, I think it's as simple
and
as that.
Do you think they would bottle it up against Spurs? They can't. They can't bottle it up, right? Okay.
No, I think, you know what's going to happen when they play Spurs? Tanguy Ndombele, who's totally motivated, goes, scores a hat trick, and then goes and thank you to my Portuguese father, Jose Mourinho, for telling me what I needed to hear, speaking truth to power again.
And then drops the mic.
Mic drop, gone, boom, done. No, I would expect them to go through. Have you seen how poor Spurs have been?
Yeah. No, I was just checking with you. I agree with you. Do you want my pointless fight of the week?
Yes, I think we've had several.
Yeah, we've spoken a lot about footballers having babies. Henrik Mkhitaryan.
We've spoken about Detroit too.
Detroit too, yeah. But Henrik Mkhitaryan,
by the way, if you have any listeners out there, do you know what Faygo is?
Faygo?
Yes.
No.
Faygo is this local soft drink, which apparently only exists in Detroit and that part of Michigan.
Well, they refuse to sell it anywhere else, and no one wants it anywhere.
Probably because it's not that good, but. It's like a very distinctive Detroit thing, apparently. And of course, the legendary, in ICP are really big on the Faygo. I'm told Eminem likes it too.
Okay. That's good.
And you can't get it here in London.
Okay.
So, you know, to our listeners out there who might be from that area.
Yes.
If you want to send us a sample, or indeed the people at Faygo as well.
Yeah.
How cool would it be if those were our two new sponsors? Faygo and ESS. The deep cleaning company.
What else do you need? Cleaning and drinks. That's all. So,
I wonder too if you could disinfect, use the Faygo to disinfect, because I don't quite know what's in there.
Yeah, you're right. Come back on my pointless fact of the week, Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Who probably does not drink Faygo, but might have used ESS to go and clean his home.
Maybe, indeed. And his wife gave birth to a little boy who's called Hamlet. Hamlet
after
Mkhitaryan. Yeah, so before you laugh, if you fancy laughing.
Well, you shouldn't be laughing at the fact that.
But Henrik Mkhitaryan's dad, who is a very good football player, who played in France, amongst other countries and clubs, in Valence, in France, was called Hamlet Mkhitaryan. And so Henrik called his son Hamlet as well.
Congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Mkhitaryan. What's even cooler about Mkhitaryan and Mrs. Mkhitaryan about their wedding, and I find this kind of odd, it was the guy they got to sing at their wedding. It's a guy named Albano. He's a singer who was popular in the early 80s in Italy. And his wife was a woman named Romina Power, the daughter of the actor, American actor Tyrone Power. And they were a huge couple, and they had a lot of songs from the 1980s that were popular at the time. For some reason, I know things move a little bit more slowly in Eastern Europe. These guys are tremendously popular in that part of the world, Albano in particular. So it's like a big coup for Mkhitaryan to get this dude to come and play at his wedding.
Like if I had Jay-Z at my wedding kind of thing.
No, it would be like if your kids had Jay-Z, had old Jay-Z at their wedding.
Oh, yeah.
In 20 years' time.
Yeah.
The whole thing is surreal. What's even weirder is in the video that's out there, Albano's not actually singing his songs, but he's singing Nel Blu Dipinto di Blu, you know, Vola.
Yeah.
Oh, but anyway, looks like they had an absolutely great
time. Well done.
Happy for the Mkhitaryans. Congratulations. And they may have a new owner very soon too at Roma. I know we've been saying that for months, but.
And congratulations to Boca Juniors.
Yes.
And Carlos Tevez, who scored the only goal of the game against Gimnasia, coached by
Diego Maradona.
Yes, and they shared a kiss before the game, which I think everybody has seen an already iconic photo on the lips, as you do, between Tevez and Maradona. And it all went down to the last game of the season. River played, or Boca could win the title, and River went to lose, and Boca to win thanks to Tevez, and they won it.
All right, well, we'll leave you with a much cooler fact than that.
Go
involving
on.
Carlos Tevez and Diego Armando Maradona.
Go on.
At some point, like 10 years ago or something like that, maybe even a little more than that, Diego Maradona had his own talk show on Argentine television.
Yes.
He came back. It was called La Noche del Diez, the Night of the Ten. And on that show, he had the most unbelievable guest.
Yeah, always. Yeah,
when Maradona calls you, you're not going to say no. But they played this a tennis football match, which he had a little court in the studio.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is dream team type stuff. Diego Maradona and his old buddy, former Marseille legend, Enzo Francescoli, up against Carlos Tevez and young Lionel Messi.
No way!
Yeah.
Can we find out on the internet?
I'm sure it's on YouTube some, out there. It's absolutely special stuff. In my memory, even this didn't happen, doesn't matter because it's still my memory, Maradona and Francescoli obviously go
won.
And
yeah,
win.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, very, very cool. All right. We're going to be back next week.
Of course.
All right. Hyped and amped as ever.